Raising Playful Tots, show number 144. Thank you for joining me for another episode of Raising Playful Tots. I'm glad that you could stop by today. My name is Melitza and welcome to this play space. It's here that we focus on play that we want to see and experience in our homes. We cover play-related topics to inspire, teach, challenge, and lead us to have a great time with these kids. And also so that we can introduce a new play idea or two. If you are new to the show, welcome. And hi to the regular playmates. Plenty of room, so come join us as we play with bubble wrap painting, thanks to a fantastic idea by Octavia and Vicky. You can find that at octaviaandvicky.com. Create bubble wrap printing. Last show, I talked about practical ways that we could support our children through this new school term. Whether your child is going to school, whether they are homeschooled, or they're a toddler, or anything all the way down to baby. So if you missed that one, pop on over to the blog where you can listen to that show and find the archive of all the other shows at raisingplayfultots.com/shows. Well, this week's show, we are talking about playful principles parents can do to set the foundation for a playful home. This is a really exciting episode, so I really hope that you'll stick around and listen. It's one show that you can use whether you have a young baby and you're just starting out on your journey of raising a playful tot, or whether you've been going at this for a while and you have different age children or many different children. It's a chance to align your parenting style, revisit some ideas, and have a good old think about how we are playing. So I really hope that you'll stick around. If not, I'll see you again next week for another show of Raising Playful Tots. I'll be right back after this break.
This is Diane Levin. I'm a professor of education at Wheelock College in Boston and the co-author of So Sexy, So Soon. And you're listening to Raising Playful Tots.
All right. Well, it's good to be back on the show this week. And today we are talking about the foundation of a playful home. And so our children need to be challenged, but not so much that they give up, or not enough that they don't try. And finding that balance can be really, really tricky. It's much better to see where they are and move them on just a little bit further. So I've got some examples for you, because this is the first principle that we're looking at. Where they are and moving them on just a little bit more. Now all of this is done through playful play. So pretend play trains. My big guy, you'll remember, I've talked about him many times, loves, loves, loves trains. And the biggest problem that we had when he was younger was that he loved the 8-track or the circular track, the very small track that you could get. And he would just sit lying down on his side and move the train up and down maybe 3 lengths of a track, just forwards and backwards, forwards and backwards. He enjoyed the motion of that activity. And while it's okay sometimes, just the idea that he wouldn't go any further than that meant that it caused us a bit of concern. Concern only because we thought there are so many other things that he could be playing and so many other things he could be doing, and it's very easy for us to intervene and help support him from where he is now, moving his little train forward and backward just a little bit and moving him on a little bit more. And so the way we did this was we set out a little village, and so he had the 8-track or the circular track as normal. And while he was moving up and down, I would come along and talk about the little tree that I was setting down, and oh, this could be a really nice forest, and I wonder if there's any more trees that we could add to our forest. And as I was adding things, he would then join in, and we would work together setting out a village or setting out a forest, and we would start playing with the activities that are there. Now, it didn't mean that he did this all the time, but this was just one way that we could move on from just moving the train track left and right, forwards and backwards. And so next time when he got the tracks out and we made the different track, even in a different way, we would put out a tree. And that would be a symbol to him that he could add more and do more, and he tried to live up to that and do more himself. So we were sharing a new aspect of it. He managed to go over a bridge and do that by himself, and now going over a bridge was added to his forward and back, over the bridge, forward and back, over the bridge. Children love this type of repetitive behaviour, and we were happy that he was doing it, but we also recognised that there are other things that he could also learn to do if he was willing to look at it. So pretend play is an excellent way of checking where they are and moving them forward a little bit. Manipulative play is also one of those areas that you can do that with. Let's say that they are a two-block builder right at the beginning stages of playing with blocks, and they're managing to get two blocks up. They're not bothered about going any further. They're just really excited about getting their two blocks. Now it's time to move them on a little further. Maybe you'll build next to them. You'll get your own blocks and you'll put your one block and in your two blocks, and then maybe you'll go for three blocks. You're not sharing with them, you need to do this, but they get to see, oh, yours is a bit higher. They might knock your blocks down, but they can also see that you've gone up a little higher. You might try some hand over hand action where you help them hold the third block in place on top of the second block. But none of this is forced and none of this is making them feel uncomfortable. So if they don't want to do it, they don't have to. The whole point of this is that we see where they are and we move them on just a little bit. Reading. They point at the dog on the page and they say, dog. We may say one word or two words or a little bit of an extension like big dog or yellow dog or floppy the dog or running dog. Something like that to just move them forward just a little bit further. Play-Doh is another example. They may enjoy fixed play or always doing one type of action. For example, your child may love to just poke the Play-Doh all the time, or when they get Play-Doh, they just squeeze it really tight. Or, like my son loved to do when he was younger, was just to cut the Play-Doh up into tiny little pieces. Well, you can sit by them and do another simple action like those of them that are poking, you can make that poked hole bigger and make it go through all the other poked holes, so you're starting to create one really big poked hole. You can squeeze all the little bits together that have been cut and make a really kind of a rough ball, because it's quite hard to make a ball but for young hands, but just squeeze it all together and show that you can make something else by squeezing, just the next step up. If they're used to cutting things into smaller pieces, instead of the random cutting that perhaps they do, find a different way of cutting to show them. So as they're cutting it up, you mirror the cutting, but cut in very small pieces or very long pieces. Maybe you want to arrange the pieces. So instead of being in a little heap, maybe that's what they've done, you might want to arrange them into lines or make them into a shape, a square or a circle or into a letter. These are just ways of playing that they get to still play the way that they're playing, but they can see another way to play because they see what you're doing. They may imitate and try and do the play that you're showing. You may feel that you want to help them, and that's good too, to be able to do that. Using what we usually have around the home is perfect. Using what we usually do around the home is perfect for moving our children on just a little bit. Now, it's really important that it's just a little bit further from where they are, because nothing is worse than having a frustrated child and a frustrated parent doing it, that we need to back off and leave them to it, because after all, it is play and it's not supposed to be work. Observe your child today at play and see one activity that you can move them forward with just a little bit past where they are right now, by showing them, by sharing with them, by modeling with them, but without expecting them to be 100% correct with it. Support this fragile attempt with descriptive praise. And if you want to know more about descriptive praise, I have a really cool interview with Ashley Merriman of Nurture Shock, show number 86. That's raisingplayfultots.com/86. 86, the number 86. And she talks a lot about praise and the different praise types that we can have. So that's one thing. When we're supporting that fragile attempt with descriptive praise, we also want to be smiling and we want to be doing it without adding pressure. They shouldn't feel as if they have to get it right. You'll see signs pretty quickly if you're going too far with the new ideas that you're trying here. And we need to beware of this little thing that starts to happen. There is a time between when we are working on something new and it's just past what we're used to doing. It's hard and it's getting harder, and there's that resistance and that frustration that builds up, but we're almost there. We push through and we get to the other side. Now, sometimes that other side is success, and sometimes the other side is failure. It doesn't work the first time that we're doing it. And that's a tricky time for us as parents, because we want to rescue our children during that time. And often if we wait just a moment, we get to the other side, because failure isn't a problem and success isn't a problem either. We need different amounts of them, but we need to experience both. The problem does come with how long do we leave it in the frustration before we intervene? And you know your children, and you know when that time will be. So I wanted to talk about that and put it out there that we do have that resistance time. And as parents, we do like to rescue our children at that point, and we should be careful, be aware of that situation. And you make that decision when to intervene and slow down and when to hold back. And that's going to be through a lot of careful observation of your child to see where their point is. Because not all frustration is bad. It's an experience, this whole way of moving the children forward just a little bit. It's an experience, and it's not a teaching session. Although it can seem that way because this is how we're talking about it today, but it's meant to be an experience. And so we have to be careful of how we are introducing it with our children and the amount of resistance that they give to it. Be happy to move on and come back another playtime or another time to play. Now let's go on to the second one, play and learning in context. Somewhere around the time that I was learning vectors, ratios, and diameters at school, I lost my love of learning maths. Why were we doing it? What real use would I have for it? My love of geography never disappeared, and that's partly to do with the teachers I had, but I also had the opportunity to see how this impacted the world. I saw how it mattered. We went on school trips, potholing in Yorkshire, where I'd come to live many years later. I married my husband, who lived close to one of the largest conurbations in North America, and he could tell me firsthand about earthquakes and the lack of rain. Vectors, ratios, and diameters were exercises to do without any real context. This is how I had learned. It was hard enough now to be interested in things, yet my love for physical geography still remains. There's a real life context, and I want us to think about learning for our children, that it be through play, and that we have as many real life contexts as we can in our homes to keep it real and to keep play and learning in context. Because learning in meaningful situations is the best way to do it. So let's think a little bit more about that. Your brother lives in Spain, and you visit every few years to see your nephews and niece. It makes sense that your family is learning Spanish, because when you Skype back and forth, you need it so that your son and your daughter can communicate with their cousins. This is a real learning context. They can see why they are learning Spanish. Learning has a purpose, and it's likely to be retained better. Dressing up and playing doctor allows your children to explore their caring side for all these sick dolls that they have. Being the bus driver, taking all the animals to the park, planning and preparing a real or pretend picnic lets many skills come together for real and pretend to imitate real life, what they really see. Moving the water from the water table to pour on an ant, this is a true story, to see what happens is the scientist in my son trying to come out to figure what will happen next. And you'll be pleased to know the ant just floated away further down the stream to the next bit of ground and hurriedly ran off somewhere else. So the ant lived to tell another story. Learning through drills and without context requires a different type of motivation, and this type of learning, although pleasing to many parents and teachers, it's not the type of play that should be the majority focus in our homes. So we have to kind of keep an eye on that type of play that, and how much of it that we do in our homes. And that, keeping an eye on it, will vary from each household depending on the stage that you're at and the values that your family has decided. Play drives more learning, and more learning drives more play. If the learning isn't fun, the children may restrict or reduce that type of play or any similar type of play in the future. Playful, meaningful situations during the early years where there is a context to learning and play are the best things. And there's easy ways to do this. So you can warm up a topic or play before you get started, instead of just dropping the children into the middle of something where there doesn't seem to be a reason why it's here or how it's here. If that constantly happens all the time, then that can be tricky for children to understand the real context of why they are doing it. Set in some context, find a way of warming up that subject, talking about it in a way that relates to their real life, what's going on right now. This is why seasonal topics work really well, because you can be doing seasonal activities, go outside, collect things that are real outside and bring them into the home or play with them outside, and the children can see where they've come from, and there's a direct correlation between what's going on there and what's happening here. Find a way to move and do the action instead of being still and instructing. Many activities that we get young children to do require them to be still, sitting still, feet still, their body still, and just their arms working, their hands working, their hand-eye coordination working. And that's not the best way for most young children to be able to work effectively for long periods of time. They need to be able to move and they need to be able to do actions. And so if you can do some of these real life meaningful situations through a movement activity where the children can move about, that's really fun. Now, it's difficult because in a classroom situation or in a situation where there are lots of children, it can call for seated activities and quiet activities because of the sheer amount of children in a space. And so that's something that you really have to work out, how you want to do schooling, how you want to do that type of activity. Instead of always sitting down, having brain breaks where you're able to get up and do activities, there's just many different ways that it can be handled, that it's not huge, huge chunks of time where children are expected to just sit quietly and do an activity. There is a time and a place for that, but in the early years, we need to be mindful of the way that our children learn, and they really, really learn through movement and action. Another way to find learning in meaningful situations is to find examples in real life as a way of sharing the work. So being able to talk about what's happening and sportscast and tell your children what's going on so that they can see how what's happening over there relates to them right here. For them, looking at the way in which they put away their toys impacts the way that they put away their room, and how mummy's putting away her clothes, and how daddy's tidying up the kitchen, and how all of these things relate to other parts in the house. So learning becomes meaningful. It's understood that we are playing and doing all these fun things, but they also have good meaning as well. Yesterday, the little one and I were reading together. He was having trouble with the word said and the word going. Two high frequency words that he's looking at. And I could see his frustration building up. We were reading, it was a nice cozy time, but he was just getting a bit lost with it all. Each time he came to the word said, it was like it was the first time that he had seen it. He was trying to sound it out. He was trying to work out what it was. And as he stopped, I could just see that it was just not working for him. Even though it was only four or less words ago that he'd seen the word said, and it was still on the same double page, even when you showed him the other word said, he couldn't remember that it was the word said or going, whichever the word was, because it was two different books. So we stopped doing it. We stopped reading and played about saying the word. We said the word said and going loudly and softly and shouted it and yelled it and did it in all sorts of different ways. We spoke it like a mouse and we got really, really silly with it. I felt better about it and my worry and frustration was diminishing. He felt better about it because he was laughing and giggling and saying it in different ways. He's so much better at voices than I am. Then we looked for the word and who could find it first on the double page. So we kind of turned it into a bit of a challenge. And somehow I was a little slow and he managed to find it most times before I found it. Lastly, we got the Bananagrams bag out and he tried to make the word said and the word going from memory, and we sounded out the letters and he would say I've done it and I would look at it and we would sound it out together or look at it and see if we could see what letters were missing. And that was a really fun activity because at some points he was playing around. He knew that the K didn't go in there, but he put the K in there and he could see as I was sounding it out with him, he would be laughing, waiting for me to get to the K. So we had some fun with it. There was some real life context because he went to get a drink later on and he saw the word on another book that his brother was reading. He got distracted like lots of five-year-olds do and saw the word and was so excited he had to tell him, look, said. And of course his brother wasn't impressed, as older brothers aren't, like, yeah, of course, it's the word said. But he was so excited that he'd actually seen it. So this didn't take place altogether. He came and went, I would say, 4 to 6 times. We were sitting for some of these activities together, cuddled up. Some of it was on the move as I prepared dinner. Some of it was him alone at the table and he would invite me over to come and do it. Other times he was next to his brothers while they did their homework. He went over and he managed to be doing something there. Other times he was yelling from one room and I was yelling from the other room back. A kind of a call and response. I would say, said, 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 said. And then he would reply, said, 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 said from the other room. And then he would try and do something really silly and then I would repeat it. And so it was just getting silly with it and having a different response with it, but it was done over a long period of time. Before we went to bed that night, I challenged him as we were having our little chat. I said, I wonder if you could find the word said and the word going. And I wasn't sure what he would say, because he'd worked on it a lot and it was still kind of tricky, but he put a smile on his face and he said yes. And so he went to the book, got the book, and he found the word said a couple of times. We only did a couple of pages. Like, I didn't want to go too far. I wanted him to feel good about the fact that he'd found it, and I didn't know whether he really could find it for lots and lots. And he was really excited about it. It was light years better, the experience that we had reading. And this morning, he wanted to show me again that he could find the word said and the word going. Now, I'm not expecting by tonight that he'll have known them forever and that's it for us and the word said and going, he knows it. I don't know when he'll learn those words, said and going. I do know for him that he had fun with his reading through play yesterday and this morning. We did a little of where they are now and a little bit more moving him forward and play in the context of learning, keeping it silly and playful where we could try it out with no consequences because we were playing and being silly. In this case, there was no test or no pressure of time. We could learn within a learning context. He sought out the word said and going and found it in a few places around the house all by himself because it was now top of mind. So how can we apply these two ideas to our home? Well, we can do it little and often. Spend a little time this week observing your child at play. While they're playing, find a way to gently move your child forward without interrupting their play. It's not as easy as it is to say it by any chance, but there is a chance to be able to do it. Make an opportunity by setting up an invitation to play where they can discover. Use their imagination, and you can also join in alongside, maybe with no agenda but to play alongside them while you observe. Maybe you'll have an agenda sometimes, not just observing, but you do want to move them on just a little bit further than where they are. What about activities in your home that rely on memorization, drilling, and out-of-context activities? Choose one of these that you do regularly or that you know that's about, that comes to mind right now, and find another way to give meaning and a playful context to the way that you're doing it. Well, I hope today's show has given some food for thought about playful principles you may want to include in your home, because it's all about fitting in with your family values and your direction. Lots of these ideas that we've talked about today seem really simple and really easy. But observation is one of those things that we don't do very much of with our children in the deeper sense. We might notice that they're doing things, but I really want you to observe, see how they are playing, see what they're doing, and notice over a few days or a week how they're playing with a particular toy, how they're playing in general, and see if you can move them just a little further forward, not massive leaps and not out of context. And so that takes a little time to get to know your child a little bit more through one activity and see if you can do that. I would love to hear how your observations go, how you helped support just a little bit further, and how you are making playful experiences concrete and real, so that they really understand the purpose of why they're doing it, without lots and lots of conversation, but they just see why they have to do what they're doing. Pop on over to the show notes on show number 144, so that's raisingplayfultots.com/144, to tell us, or you can use the free voicemail by going to raisingplayfultots.com/feedback. There you'll be directed to a page where you can just click the link. It's free, and you can record your message and tell us a little bit about what you've been doing for observations. You can also use that feedback for also to be sharing any feedback that you have about the show, something that you've liked, something that you miss, something that you want, even future show ideas that you have. Thank you for listening to the show today. I'm really appreciate how you've let me be part of your day. Sign up for the Raising Playful Tots note with some simple parenting thoughts, 10 ways to extend your child's play special report, play activities, podcast information, you name it, it's in there, along with special subscriber information. I try and keep this to be a weekly note that comes out. At the moment, it comes out on a Friday and a Saturday. I've just started doing the Saturday one, so we'll see how that one will go. But I'm certainly trying to be regular now with the Friday newsletter. You've been listening to Raising Playful Tots, show number 144. Come on over and play next week. Until then, find time for some unplugged play. Join with me each week as we share, learn and laugh together about making the most of early childhood playtime. Goodbye!